This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
What does it mean? To be American.
As I often say, optimism does not mean I think everything is great. It's about hope for the future and what we can become as a country if we remain clear-eyed about the risks and take bold action to save our democracy. It's a statement of intent. And one part of doing so is to focus on our local communities. Although it may seem impossible to impact national politics, people can surely make a difference right where they live. That's exactly what today's guest, Dan Wu, has done here in Lexington, Kentucky. Dan is the vice mayor of Lexington and is the first Asian American to serve in that role. He served on numerous local boards before winning election as vice mayor, but before that, he had little experience in politics, instead opening his own ramen shop and appearing on the TV show MasterChef. Vice Mayor Wu, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Thanks for having me.
So it's not every day you hear about the ramen restaurant chef government pipeline.
Uh-huh.
You know, why did you decide to hang up the kitchen utensils and run for office?
Yeah, it is a very atypical pipeline. To be honest, COVID. COVID came along in 2020 and just really knocked us for a loop in the hospitality industry. And I wasn't able to continue doing my restaurant business. So as that kind of faded out in 2020 to 21, I was literally looking for what my next thing was going to be. And, you know, in the previous recent years, I'd been getting more and more involved in community, doing organizing, fundraising, just working with a lot of nonprofits and really thinking about how do I help make Lexington a better place. And then I heard about, you know, a seat opening up on the at-large council in Lexington. And in 2022, I thought I'd give it a shot, and here I am.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about that time period. The restaurant business is hurting because of COVID. You're working with these nonprofits. What are you learning as part of the nonprofit work that leads you to think, maybe I could do this and run for this open seat?
Yeah. You know, as soon as COVID really like solidly hit us, I mean, I remember the date. It's March 16th when the governor ordered that all restaurants needed to go to go and take out only. Mm-hmm. That was the day that, you know, most of us kind of either shut down permanently or at least temporarily. And me and my friends in the restaurant industry, we kind of immediately got to work, figuring out what are we going to do with all this food in our coolers, trying to donate them to various nonprofits, but then also realizing suddenly we would have thousands and thousands of restaurant and hospitality workers out of work. So we kind of immediately got together with a bunch of us and started doing essentially mutual aid relief for providing, you know, using some of our kitchen spaces. I worked with Lotta Swan from Great Bagel. We mm-hmm. worked through some of those kitchen spaces and created food and meals to go for people, anybody who needed them, not just hospitality workers, also trying to get household goods and things like that. So it was kind of great to see, like, that's exactly the kind of work that happens from the ground up, that we're not waiting for government intervention, because it would be, you know, weeks and months out before we started seeing things like the PPP loans and the ARPA funds and things mm-hmm. like that. As we know, government works slowly, but people on the ground work really quickly, and people on the ground really understand what their community needs and what those resources are. And everything is relational. So it's literally was just me finding my own network of friends and acquaintances and just kind of cobbling things together. And that's really the beauty of, I think, nonprofit and community-led organizations is they're nimble, they're agile, and they have their pulse on what their community needs.
So you run for office for a council at-large seat. You win, and not only do you win, but you receive the most votes of any of the council at-large candidates. And in Lexington, Kentucky, the city council is comprised of 12 districted council members and then three other at-large that the whole city elects. And the top vote recipient of those council at-large candidates becomes the vice mayor. So what the heck does the vice mayor do? I think a lot of people don't even know what the role really entails.
Sure. I can understand why there is confusion, because the title honestly really should be more like council president. I do not work for the mayor or in the mayor's administration. I am essentially the leader of our legislative branch, which is the council.
And what sorts of things does that entail to try to lead these other members in the council?
Sure. I have to assign my colleagues to their offices, to committee assignments. I can put items in committee without a vote. I can create task forces and working groups and really kind of help guide and lead some of the agenda, but also, at least in my mind, kind of guiding what the council culture should be, kind of how we should work together. So it is certainly a leadership role, and it left me no room to just kind of wander in on day one and sit back and just watch things. I kind of immediately had to get to work on sort of a different level, but I've really, really enjoyed it.
You mentioned council culture. I'm curious how that impacts the functioning of local government.
You know, council is such an interesting entity because we're elected officials, so we don't have a boss right above us in the hierarchy. Our bosses are the voters, right? We have, you know, 300,000 bosses that we have to answer to. But what that means is there's nobody necessarily really guiding kind of our philosophies or how we work and interact with each other. And one of the things that very often happens in different local governments is councils sometimes end up being rubber stamps for the administration. Mm-hmm. This council in the last, I would say, 4 to 6 years has become the most diverse council we've ever had in Lexington, both in terms of racial demographics. We've had a majority woman council for some years. We have the most members of the LGBTQ community. I'm the first immigrant member of council, first Asian American member of council. And all that to say is the representation has really changed on council, which means we have different voices from different communities, from different lived experiences. And we bring with us a lot of different opinions and different perspectives on looking at things. So anybody who's paying attention to local politics right now knows that we are very opinionated. We're kind of feisty, sometimes messy. But all that is to say, I think Lexington is more widely represented than it's ever been.
What's been the most surprising thing since your time on council and as vice mayor about the role of local government in people's lives? And the follow-up will be, what's a misconception people have about local government that you wish they understood better?
Sure. I'll kind of couch it in this way. I've really enjoyed just about every aspect of what I do as a local legislator. The most frustrating thing has been our relationship and sometimes the power imbalance between us and the state government and then the federal government. You know, there's such a thing as supremacy, which means state laws trump local laws. So sometimes the things that we're trying to do locally don't always line up with the majority in Frankfurt, in our capital. So sometimes the things we do get undone very quickly. We saw that when we passed a ban on source of income discrimination, for example, that kind of immediately got quashed. So that's been a really delicate and challenging balance for us that I didn't really think about before I got into this job. I had this sort of notion of like, yeah, we're local elected leaders elected locally to govern locally, but it's not that simple. We're also seeing that ripple effect now in terms of how we relate to the federal government, in that some of our federal funding is being threatened or at the very least precarious, and that very much impacts what we're able to do in the city because, you know, what I always like to say is how we spend our money is the expression of our values, right? But if we don't have money to spend on these programs and on these efforts, we can't do it. And some of our money does come from the federal level.
And what misconception do you think the general public has about local government that could be understood better?
Yeah, I think people need to understand how much local legislation and local ordinances and local taxes, things like that, really affect people day to day in a way probably more acutely than state or federal level things happening. The state and federal, and particularly the federal, that draws the most attention. That's mm-hmm. the stuff that's very salient. That's the stuff that's in our news feeds and in our social media all day long, everything that's coming out of Washington. I really want to refocus people on paying attention to what's happening locally when we're talking about, you know, zone changes and housing developments and solar power and sidewalks and tree canopies and parks and things like that. Those are literally the things that impact us. day to day to day. So I would love for people to kind of pay attention to the local elections and also to what's happening in City Hall.
You know, that's a consistent theme in the conversations I have on this show, whether it's, you know, people who are focused on national politics or, you know, are in Washington and focused on the federal government, from people at the local level, people in civic health organizations. The consistent message is local government matters to people and affects people maybe more than what the federal government does. And so we need to, I think, reshift our focus as a country onto these local issues. And to that end, can you tell us a story of a time when you think local democracy really worked for people, maybe in a way that is inspiring?
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of put it this way. So, like, we had something that's seemingly kind of small that happened recently. So the city of Lexington has had a longstanding relationship with the UK ROTC to use one of our more rural parks, Heisel Farm Park, as a training site for UK ROTC. So that contract was coming up for renewal, and there's no money that changes hands. We're literally just allowing them to train on our park site. And so, you know, on our docket, usually there's 40 to 60 to 80 items on there, right? Lots of contractual things, and not, you know, everything gets a lot of scrutiny. This particular item got onto our docket, and then multiple members of our community came out and kind of spoke against it and talked about why they didn't think this was a good idea or a good partnership for ROTC, both in terms of people who have trauma and PTSD from gun violence and just the idea that these are our parks and refuges where you want to kind of go and get away and have some quiet time, and having folks in camouflage with, you know, fake guns running around, it was not conducive to that. And it made me realize, oh, this is exactly how this direct local government and democracy works, is these folks are kind of bringing to our attention an issue that we may not have been thinking about as lawmakers because we have all these other things on our plates. So I started contacting these folks who came out and spoke, and we talked and talked about some other ideas, and we ended up adjusting that contract down to 6 months and making a commitment that we would not be renewing with them going forward, because it was such a great example of the community coming forward to make us pay attention to something and then also working with us to figure out what that solution was going to be. So it's not a top-down from us as lawmakers, the community, here's what we're going to do. And it also wasn't just completely bottom-up. It was a very collaborative effort. And it's the kind of access and communication that is often much more difficult on the state and federal level, right? It's very hard to get a meeting with a state representative or with a congressman. So that was just such kind of a beautiful example of how that local democracy should work.
We're speaking with Dan Wu, the vice mayor of Lexington, who just told us that there's an example of the community coming out in force to impact the way the city council looked at an issue. So it does matter when people show up to city council meetings, and it does matter when they contact their council member?
It absolutely does. Yeah. I think there's, you know, this is something I think a lot about, too, coming from some organizing spaces. What I would really want from grassroots organizers and people in the community to know, at least about this council right now, is that we are very accessible, we are very open to meeting with folks. So you have to kind of figure out what is most impactful. Is it most impactful for me to stand on the street with a sign saying council needs to do this? Or is it more impactful for someone to email their council member and say, hey, I have this issue that I want to talk to you about. Can I get a meeting with you? And let's have a conversation about it and create something productive out of it, right? Both things have value, but I just very much want to emphasize that local government is the most accessible level of government. We are very much open to hearing from folks and working productively towards goals together.
How do we square that with turnout in local elections? I mean, the city council members are elected with turnout that is, in my, this is me editorializing, but I think pathetic as a scholar of voting rights, when, you know, less than half of the electorate shows up to select our leaders. Are you all actually truly representative of all of us? And how do we square this message that contacting the city council member is the way to affect change when the feedback loop that you all receive every 2 years is pretty poor with respect to the number of people actually participating.
Yeah, and I have to say, in recent years, I feel like a lot of what drives turnout is sort of the outrage machine, right? It's because you're pissed off and you're mad mm-hmm. at the incumbent, or you're mad at whatever candidate, and all of the national candidates and the national races kind of suck all the oxygen out of the room, so that by the time you're flipping to page two or three, where the council members and the circuit court judges and the county clerk and all the local electeds are, you've kind of lost the attention. And certainly, you know, any ballots where you get to check a party ticket, you don't get us, because, mm-hmm. you know, our local elected officials, many of us are nonpartisan, including council and mayor. So if you just check a Democrat or Republican box and walk off, you've not voted for us. Our sort of partisan primary system has that same effect, too. So if you're a registered independent and you don't show up in May to vote for the primary, you've also missed your local races, even though you can show up, even though you can't vote in the Democratic or Republican primary races, you can vote for local. And that's also sort of missed. So there's some systemic stuff that's kind of built that way to kind of favor like the bigger races and kind of have you ignore us. But I think we can also, as a local government, do a better job of communicating to folks, what is it exactly that we do every day that is so impactful to the local communities. But overall, you're right. I mean, I would love to see turnout numbers go up. It's very concerning when people are talking about taking away mail-in voting, taking away early voting, all the different increase in access, that being taken away. I was very bummed when post-COVID, we had way longer early voting mm-hmm. during COVID, and we kind of took that away. And there was, for me, no reason to limit access to people. The more people that we can get voting, the better for democracy.
What do you think Lexington does well that other cities should consider doing?
Lexington has been set up to succeed by a number of different factors, the biggest of which, I think, is when we merged city and county government in 1974, we made local government nonpartisan. That is huge. Mm. That is the main reason that I'm where I am today. If we had partisan races for mayor and for council in Lexington, I don't think that I would have run.
Why is that?
Because I'm honestly super, super sick to death of partisan politics in America, mm-hmm. The way that it currently operates, both on the state and the federal level, to where it's really party over all else, even values. If the Democrats say they like chocolate, suddenly the Republicans have to be the anti-chocolate party. Hmm. And that might flip suddenly, then maybe the Republicans are the pro-choc. So the values or the issues don't even matter, right? It's just all out war between parties. What I love about council is we have 15 council members and a mayor. Very often, the voters don't actually know what parties we belong to, which I think is great. Mm-hmm. We don't caucus. Right? There's not a majority and a minority caucus on council. With any given issue, I don't take for granted where any of my colleagues stand on it. If we are saying, hey, we're talking about a proposal to allow large-scale solar in the agricultural zone, right? I can't look at my 15 council members and just look at the R or the D next to their name to know where they stand on the issue. And that's great, because I have to go and talk to every single one of my colleagues and say, hey, how do you feel about this particular issue? Can I get your support? What's your objection? How do we work together? So on every issue, it's like that. And you and I may vote the same on one issue and then be on opposing sides the next issue. And I think that is super, super healthy.
Are you optimistic in general about voting and elections during these times?
Shoo, it's it's really hard to be optimistic. It's really, really hard to not lose hope. But I think I come back to, whether you're somebody who wants to run for office, whether you're a community organizer, whether you work for a nonprofit or just a regular person, my optimism comes from the fact that when people realize they can make an impact on a local level, you may not be able to effectuate, you know, change to our national immigration policy, for example, right? But you can donate housewares to Kentucky refugee ministries so that a new American family coming in from, you know, a war-torn country can have a microwave and some forks and spoons. You know what I mean? So there are all kinds of different ways that you can participate and help in your communities and in democracy on that local level.
Dan Wu is the vice mayor of Lexington, Kentucky. Dan, thank you so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
It's my pleasure.
Lexington's vice mayor, Dan Wu, was just with us, Josh. What did he have to say about the abysmal local voter turnout that we see time and again?
I think he shared my concern that the local community doesn't show up enough for local elections, partly based on the structure of how we do things, the fact that it's at the end of the ballot. If you're just picking a party, a straight ticket party for Democrats and Republicans, you're not voting in city council. And yet, I also found it interesting about how he discussed the importance of showing up to city council meetings, the importance of contacting your local representative. So while I think we both wished voter turnout was much higher in local government, he actually gave me some hope that city council is still responsive to the community and the voices they're hearing in the community based on the emails they receive, based on the conversations they have, and based on the people showing up to city council meetings.
I heard something in your conversation with Dan Wu that really stands out. I wonder if it does for you, too. And he was talking about how fortunate Lexington is in these times to have a nonpartisan local legislature in its Urban County Council. That really stood out to me, did it to you? Because it's pretty unusual, isn't it?
It did. I mean, on the one hand, we do know that local governments that have a nonpartisan structure where candidates don't run on a party label tend to have lower voter turnout because people use the party label as a proxy for who they want to vote for. And sometimes if you don't know, you don't know what the people stand for, the names, then you just don't vote. And so I think we do need to do a much better job of educating the public about the candidates' views, about what differences there are among the candidates. On the other hand, he described how it helps local government actually work better for all people, that it doesn't matter what your party label is when thinking about an issue of zoning or an issue of homelessness or an issue of local taxes or whatever it is that actually affects people's daily lives. So I think there are both good and bad things with respect to nonpartisan local elected officials, but I loved how he focused on the positives of this is actually how government is supposed to work. Be responsive to the people and try to make people's lives better. What does it
mean to be American? Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.